Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back as we discuss romances and relationships in our four nice selections this year, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula.
So here's my brief defense of why I think that the Jane-Rochester relationship works. Number one, it's built on likeness of spirit instead of just appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Neither finds the other good-looking at first.
Right.
Over time, the attraction, both spiritual and physical, is undeniable, though.
Mm-hmm.
In our passage that we selected to highlight this year, Rochester refers to their connection as being like a string between them running from one of their ribs to the others.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they enjoy each other's company. They have philosophical discussions, heart-to-hearts about difficult experiences, and just plain good-natured teasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I confess that I forgive both Rochester and Rhett Butler a lot because I find them funny.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to, you know, like a charming guy. You know, he's charming. Yeah. They're charming.
Especially if I don't have to interact with them in real life.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Three, they acknowledge and forgive each other's flaws while respecting each other's good qualities. Number four, they come to view themselves as equals. Rochester talks a blue streak, and he is a very big personality and presence.
Mm-hmm.
He could easily dominate or intimidate a timid person. But Jane eventually finds her footing, and she can speak her mind to him as nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
She tells him when he's wrong. She refuses to do things she doesn't want to do, and he likes her the better for it.
Mm-hmm.
An example is, after she accepts his proposal, he just wants to shower her with presents and get the jewels and let's make you up and get a carriage and, you know, all kinds of, you know, treating her like a doll. And Jane says, you know, I am your plain Quakerish governess, and she wants to accept some level of guest, but for the most part, she's like, I want to know who I am, and you're going to like me better as the person that you recognize as having fallen in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's the famous proposal scene under the tree. Jane tells off Rochester in a glorious way, basically saying, you're an idiot for marrying Blanche, who is not your equal and doesn't love you. And by golly, I am not sticking around to see it. She says that much more eloquently. But key here, she herself claims equality to Rochester. She says, it is my spirit that addresses your spirit, just as if both had passed through the grave and we stood at God's feet equal, as we are. As we are, repeated Mr. Rochester. So, he added, enclosing me in his arms. So I do not like Rochester's methods of getting her to see her own equality, especially having her compare her own sincerity to Blanche's pretensions. I have a similar reaction when I watch V for Vendetta. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I am, very much, yeah.
In that storyline, the movie is what I've seen.
Yeah.
Our protagonist makes the heroine think that she's been locked up in jail in order to strengthen her.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
But what I do like about this scene in Jane Eyre is here in the 1830s, a decade before the women's rights movement really gets started, a male character and a female character are proclaiming their equality aloud.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like your analysis of their relationship. Obviously, I don't agree with it in whole, but in parts, I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. I guess I feel like in the end, for me, what we have to acknowledge, especially in that scene, that proposal scene, is that, you know, to look at it objectively or from the negative viewpoint that I have, however you want to phrase it, Rochester successfully manipulates Jane's reactions to and feelings for him, even in that scene. So her proclamations of her equality to him always leave a bad taste in my mouth because they are manipulated. He's manipulating her to those feelings, and which makes me question if he really sees her as an equal or if he's just trying to get her to a certain place. And that's where I have issues with him that probably will never be resolved because the book doesn't give us any more information. It's just interpretation at some point, right? Mm-hmm. So I do believe she's more than his equal in intelligence and morality and good qualities like that. He needs to rise up to her level to be equal, right? But he consistently leads her, either, you know, and usually it is through manipulations and or lies, to exactly where he wants her. And that's the part of their relationship that I have a problem with, but that's probably a lot based on my own personal history of being in an abusive relationship that included a lot of emotional and psychological abuse and manipulation, as well as physical abuse and all that. So just to clarify that the way I see him is through my lens. I don't expect everybody else to agree with me. That's just my lens. I do always end up thinking when I read this book that yes, Jane loves Rochester despite his bad behavior, and he does have that kind of bad boy persona in most adaptations of the book, which, to be honest, I've always felt like she has a way of excusing or rationalizing his bad behavior away, just a little too much like a modern-day abused woman does, you know? I mean, abused women are kind of famous for rationalizing the abuse that they receive. But to be fair, I feel that way about all the abusive elements in all four of our books this year, that there are elements of that where the characters, whether they're male or female, whoever's on the abused end of the stick, as it were, there's rationalizations and excuses going on as to why that is happening to them. And I feel like that's a very classic stereotypical symptom of abuse. And so I find that in all our books, not just this one, all three of them. And she also loves him in the end, especially, despite his physical imperfections. In fact, she loves him more after he is disfigured and half-blinded because he needs her so much. And so I'm always left at the end of the book with all the rosy picture that's painted of their happily ever after kind of life. I'm always like, but, you know, what does that tell us about Jane Eyre herself, that her love grows because he needs her so much physically, now that he's less of a man physically, if you will, and to use the language of the day, than he was? You know, I mean, it's a very strange ending for the book, I feel like. That they're you talk about their equality, and I think you're right. I think in the end there is a balance in their relationship, but it's not something that's as clear cut as simply they are equal to each other. That balance kind of, you know, fluctuates, and part of it includes he needs her, so she's more equal to him when he needs her more. He's less physically whole, and so she's more equal to him. It's very strange to me. It's a very strange equality. And she, like, again, I want to emphasize that I always felt like she was superior to him intellectually, morally, I don't know what the word is, but like with kindness and generosity of soul, she was always superior to him. So he has to rise in those ways to become equal to her. So that equality that they have, to me, is a very strange combination of elements that isn't one-to-one easy to think about. It leaves me with a lot of uncomfortable parts and a lot of glad parts. Like, I'm glad that he becomes a better person, you know, and can rise morally and emotionally, because that makes me feel like maybe he's nice to their kids. You know, spoiler alert, they have kids, you know. I mean, I want him to be a nice father. I don't want him to treat their children the way he treated Adele, you know. So we don't know. It's not spelled out, but I hope that he's nice to their children, you know. So I feel like those kind of things, that yes, they achieve a kind of equality at the end of the story, and I love that about how Bronte wraps up this book. I do. I love that, and I love what you say about those, about their being both being able to proclaim their equality to each other out loud. I just have some residual uncomfort comfortable with some of those elements that go into that. But overall, I think we have a good way of looking at this relationship through very different lenses, you know,
sure,
where
sure,
we can find commonality and still have a little difference in there. So
sure. No, thank you for bringing up the point that, yeah, their definition and Bronte's definition of what equality means, it is a negotiation.
It is. It definitely is.
As we look at all of women's rights.
And it's not just about, like, class. It's not just as simple as being equal in terms of, I mean, you mentioned that Jane has money at the end. Well, she is, with money, she is in a different class now. She is more on his level. But that's not the only thing that makes them become more equitable as partners in life. And I think that's very interesting. I do. I think it's all very interesting, the elements that go into the relationship they have at the end of the book.
Right. And just how you mentioned the very important fact, you know, no two people ever read the same book, because we are looking at it through our own lenses.
Yeah.
And so I am more optimistic that the reason at the end that, yeah, he has a disability now and he needs her in some ways physically, mm-hmm. more. He does regain his sight after a certain time,
right.
period.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, for a while, he definitely needs her more physically. I, in my head, see that as he comes to accept his own worth,
mm-hmm.
as a person with disabilities.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And let me tell you, that is a very challenging thing. As a person who is disabled, and, you know, I've watched my husband, you know, carry the weight of supporting our family, you know, and everything. I mean, I contribute, you know, and everything, but not the way that I would be able to if I had the brain that I have in a healthy body. I could have had a very different career doing something, you know, that physically I can't do because of my health problems. And so the feelings of unworthiness, or maybe that's not quite the right, it's not really unworthiness, but just feeling like you can't contribute fully as much as the other partner does, and that so much is on the other partner's shoulders, that's a tough burden to carry. And as a female in the modern era that we live in, it's hard for me. For Rochester, a male in the 1830s, when it was always, the male was supposed to be the, you know, strong supporting, you know, I mean, that would have been a true challenge for him as a man. And I think how he sees himself at the end of the book with Jane, acknowledging that he needs her, accepting that he needs her, is his redemption from the way he treated those other women in his life when he was so controlling, and so he would get humiliated at the slightest little insult, you know, or whatever. You know, he really does. I do appreciate that his character changes in those ways. I think that's very important. And the fact that he is, for lack of a better phrase, you know, physically disabled, while all that part of his character is growing, I think is very crucial and important. And kudos to Bronte for writing a male hero who loses doesn't he lose a hand? I get confused with what's
left. He loses a hand, an eye, and then the remaining eye, he loses sight in for a couple of years, I think.
Right. So, I mean, kudos to her for writing, that's our hero. That's our romantic hero, you know. I mean, we don't have a disfigured romantic hero. Well, Phantom of the Opera, but that's not one of our books, you know. I mean, you know, we'd have to look pretty far, you know. We don't have that in any of our other books, you know, this year. So I do feel like we will talk more about, excuse me, about things like the more abusive nature, the abusive things that happen in this book and our other books. So we don't probably need to keep going on about that. But in future episodes, we're going to talk more about those more dysfunctional kind of things and how they affect our characters and their relationships. But I think we've kind of done Rochester and Jane Eyre, you know. So we will be moving on now to our other fabulous male hero, our character Rhett Butler. Join us next time as we continue our discussion in our four nice books, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Round Table.